Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody and welcome to episode 243 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host, coming to you live tonight from Austin, Texas. So good to be back live with you guys. Welcome to all of our audience up in the WMLD range, the voice of the Hudson Valley. Welcome to all of you folks during your drive time. So glad to be part of your listening pleasure every day, and to be bringing you guys bomb stuff like what we have this evening. Our guest, Byron Burkhammer, therapist from Beginnings Ibogaine Clinic, is here to discuss, as always, being our Dudes and Beer psychedelia correspondent, here to discuss the world of psychedelia and the recent decriminalization of psychedelia in towns across America. There are now about three or four towns, I think, and there are another couple going for it, but there's at least three or four that have things fully decriminalized now. And it's great. It's going to open things up to therapeutic use, research for medicine, all kinds of things. So we're going to be talking to Byron Burkhammer from Beginnings Ibogaine about that tonight. Do not forget that the Dudes and Beer podcast, not talking sound, the Dudes and Beer podcast is now brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're like me and love podcasting or want to be like me and start podcasting, stop on by PodcastCadets.com. That is where you can get all the help you need, whether it is starting your show, naming your show, writing a description, starting your website, learning about distribution, monetization, how to start a podcast for business, schools, churches, whatever. Stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. Use the code DUDES20 and save 20% on your checkout. With that being said, we have a great report tonight from John Bowne. Came out about a week or so ago about 5G. And, of course, we have the great Dr. John Hall. We need to have him on again. What's funny is we got comments last time about how the show about 5G ended up going into politics. And it's so funny to see, like, most of what we were talking about in that episode is coming to light right now. In the impeachment trial. It's absolutely amazing. Go back and check that out. But we will be having Dr. John Hall on again soon to talk about some of the things that John Bowne talks about in this report about 5G. Here he is, John Bowne from Daily News Collective.
Sure. 5G means more devices at mega-fast speeds, low delays, and your personal files will instantly pop out of the cloud. But the 5G rollout is rife with so many issues threatening human health and civil liberties that it's simply easier for the Mockingbird media to sell you a stack of positives rather than address the mountain of negatives.
Self-driving cars, smart cities, fully connected homes, robots. This is the future. And it will be powered by 5G. 5G signals are powerful, but they don't reach as far. Making it work will require thousands, maybe even millions of mini cell phone towers pretty much everywhere you can imagine. Every lamppost, the side of every building, maybe even in every room of your home.
Self-driving cars, for example, require a continuous stream of data. The quicker that information is delivered to autonomous vehicles, the better and safer they can run.
For many analysts, this is just one example of how 5G could become the connective tissue for the Internet of Things, an industry that's set to grow threefold by 2025, linking and controlling not just robots, but also medical devices, industrial equipment, and agricultural machinery.
Meanwhile, the federal government just signs off on big tech's blank check. They will just deal with the repercussions later. Why not? Congress is so unaccountable. Liability is at an all-time joke level. Why not let a massive unknown potential health threat spread itself throughout every city and suburb across the United States?
The only way we have a deployable, secure 5G system is either with Nokia, Ericsson, Samsung, or some combination of them. American telecom companies are playing and will play a central role in the deployment of 5G, both in the United States and globally. But in terms of developing affordable and deployable equipment sets, we've got to work closely with trusted allies.
Coming to a street lamp near you, right? 300,000 of them are going to sprout up in the United States. And preliminary studies from National Toxicology Program looking at 2G and 3G look like it can possibly cause heart tumors and brain tumors in rats, not people, mind you, rats, but change cells in the brain and cause ringing in the ears. So we don't know the long-term health risk, and I'm not willing to take that off the table, especially since 5G is closer to you because it doesn't, it's faster and it's higher definition, but it doesn't travel as far. So I need to see longer-term studies on this.
Why is 5G a risk? 5G is ultra-high frequency and intensity, which is further compounded by the millimeter waves that don't travel through objects or as far as 4G or 3G. Add to that, more mini cell towers must be installed because the current cell towers can't accommodate 5G. As RadiationHealthRisks.com writes, it is estimated that they will need a mini cell tower every 2 to 8 houses. This will greatly increase our RF radiation exposure. All cell towers emit radio frequency radiation. This is what makes them dangerous. 5G can support up to 1 million devices per square kilometer, while 4G supports only up to 100,000 devices per square kilometer. With RF radiation, how close the source is to our physical bodies is more important than the power level or wattage of the radiation. RF radiation dissipates with distance. In other words, a low-powered exposure right next to someone is more dangerous than a more powerful exposure a long ways away. Also, the longer the exposure time is, the more dangerous it is. 5G will be the worst of both worlds. We will have more sources around us and closer to us, and there will be more powerful and continuous emissions. One solution? You can invest in a Wi-Fi router guard. A Wi-Fi router guard will block between 90 and 95% of the RF radiation that your router emits. John Bound reporting.
John Bound there, coming in with some great stuff. Make sure to check him out at Daily News Collective. So happy to have him part of the HC Universal Network. Thank you for everything that you do, John Bound, not only for the network, but for knowledge, truth, getting things like that out there. Once again, everybody, our topic this evening with our guest Byron Berkhammer will be the decriminalization of hallucinogens across America. What that means, what that might mean. I do have one more audio clip for you guys before we welcome our guest. And I think it's I think it's really apropos to play this because Timothy Leary is probably considered the guru of LSD. Not the father of LSD, but the guru of LSD, most definitely. And it's interesting to hear from his words what it's about. He was one of the people that said we should just decriminalize all drugs and make people go out and get a license, like a driver's license, you know, like you got to go out and take a psychological test if you want to use cocaine. Are you a addictive personality type person? If so, you can't be licensed to get it. So interesting concepts, but let's hear from Timothy Leary himself.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out of college. Drop out of graduate school, drop out of junior executive, drop out of senior executive, turn on, tune in, drop out.
The importance of that to me is that it was a demonstration by far the baby boom generation of their numbers, of their strength, of their clout, of their power, which is straight quantity numbers. There were 76 million Americans born between the years 46 and 64. They were trained by Dr. Spock to be demand-fed. They were the first consumer species. They were the first electronic species. But the very fact that you were an American and young meant that you deserved the world. And I don't apologize for being kind of goofy. because at the same time, we had Johnson running the country, sending 500,000 troops to Vietnam. We stopped that. We had J. Edgar Hoover, total madman, running our secret police. So we did great, but I don't want to be held responsible for the day-to-day quotes, because literally we were out there in the front lines just making it up as we went along. And I give us this credit. We were willing to take risks. We were willing to be holy fools. We were willing to make asses of ourselves. But let's not hang these portraits of ourselves, making fools of ourselves, on the walls of the Smithsonian Institute.
And I think it's nice to hear it straight from the horse's mouth, folks, because welcome to the show, by the way. Byron Berkhammer, how are you doing, my friend? You still there, Byron?
Yes, I am.
Great, great. Sorry about that. How have you been?
I've been doing well, Chris. I've been doing really well.
Great, man. It's been way too long since we've had you on, and since then, I mean, whenever we first had you on the last time talking about the bufotode poisonings going on with animals and people in Florida, was right at the time that Colorado and Denver passed the decriminalization of mushrooms.
Yes, and shortly after Oakland.
Yeah, and it was wild because Oakland went like ayahuasca. They went all kinds of stuff.
They sure did.
It's really interesting, like I said, to hear Timothy Leary talking about that, because you know, you have a career and it gets boiled down to a quote, folks. He was a great psychologist before that, had a long standing career in research, ran across LSD through research, and was part of the hipster underground, things like that. And went off, and some would say off the deep end, he would say off the enlightened end.
Some would say off the deep end, and, Terrence McKenna or Dennis McKenna would, beg to differ.
Yeah.
They would, just say he was the, father of their work, so to speak. And, you know, Terrence has passed away, of course, but, Dennis is still going strong. He still attends LAPS in California every year. That's the Los Angeles Science Symposium for Psychedelics. And he still attends that every year. And he's a big proponent. So we've got people moving forward, building on Timothy's work.
Well, and that's just it. Like I said, to hear him say, yeah, you know, we went out and we made asses of ourselves publicly to get this message out there, to let people know about this. And, you know, like I was telling you before the show that I've had the struggle of whether or not to rename the show before, because Dudes and Beer can be a little bit off-putting to some of our guests who we have had on. Like initially, whenever I contact them, they're like, yeah, this typically isn't the kind of show I do. And I'm like, please, please visit the website. I know that the name sounds a certain way, but here's the concept. And I lay out the idea like I did last week for our listeners.
You have substance to your show.
Well, that's just it, is that it's a what's in a name, as Shakespeare would say. You know, the name just gets the conversation rolling. It's the fact of beer, what have you. It's the great leveler. The public house was the great leveling ground where everybody went, drank on equal ground at the bar. That's where the revolution was plotted. That's where scientific conversations happened and philosophic conversations and the like. So if we go back to that, I think we might be better. If we could have these conversations, and decriminalization of hallucinogens, I think, is a big conversation. It's a big one.
It is a big conversation. It's a very big conversation. For most people, you know, any of us that delve into the field of psychedelia, we're considered kind of out there by most people. My friends consider me that way, just out there. Byron's out there. But I don't see it that way. I see this as a very progressive thing. I see this as a very scientific thing. I see this as the coming thing. I see this as the coming thing in psychological medicine. We're going to have a lot of, in the future, what I see coming is MDMA-assisted therapy. I see a lot of microdosing coming into play. And as far as people's mental health, and getting people better, and that's what we need more of in this nation, is a mental health kind of a, I guess you'd say, an infrastructure needs to be kind of redone in the mental health industry, if you would. And I see these things coming into play as a big, big, big help. They really will be. And there's no doubt. There's no doubt. These medicines are here. They're here to stay, and they're here to go forward, keeping up with the mental health. People are already using psychedelics such as psilocybin, treating depression, microdosing that, and getting great help from it. People, the work I do with Ibogaine has freed people from years of PTSD and depression. I've seen people that cry the next day after they've gone through a session of Ibogaine.
Yeah.
And, it's just like they're a new person. And there are tears in their eyes because they say that over. Yeah, it's over if you want it to be. And we have to carry this work forward. So we have to do this.
Well, I firmly agree with you myself. I think that these substances, these compounds, hold great, great possibilities for healing,
yes,
specifically things like ibogaine, ayahuasca, DMT. All of them. And Maria Sabina even said it. She was the Oaxacan mushroom priestess that really brought the knowledge of mushrooms to light in America. And I want to say it was like a Rolling Stone article or something like that. In the book that came out.
Right.
And that really got people going down to Oaxaca, things like that, doing the ceremonies and stuff. But she even said that the Westerners don't treat the mushroom properly.
And that's true.
That's and even whenever you start to have the conversation about it with most people, that's immediately where it goes. And it's like, well, if that's where your mind's stuck, sure, absolutely, but there are 1,001 ways, and cultures like Maria Sabina's, the Native American cultures, cultures in Africa that used ibogaine, South America that used ayahuasca, things like that. They didn't just go out and make some ayahuasca and like chill out on a Sunday afternoon and just ayahuasca it up while they were fishing. That's not what they did.
Right.
People, they didn't like carry around a Sonoran toad in their back pocket and just go around ticking it off and licking it. It was done for sacred reasons. It was done mainly for healing reasons.
And the thing about it, when you use the word revered, these medicines were revered.
Yeah.
They have been revered for thousands of years. And they're revered because they're healing. They're called master plants for a reason. The master plants are used to heal. And this is what the shamans have always known. They've gone into this knowing that these are revered medicines. They're to be respected. When you go in to use them, you're to use them a certain way. You're to use them ceremonially. You're not to use them,
in a recreational way.
Never. They would, these medicines would never be used recreationally. I don't think I know of anyone that would pick these things up and use them recreationally. They're just not used that way.
Yeah.
Never have been.
Even when lysergic acid was first synthesized, it was not intended to be used in that way.
Right.
I mean, the doctor dosed himself to see what would happen in the light.
Sure.
But
that's a scientific method.
It was meant to be used in a clinical atmosphere. It was meant to be used to help people have psychological breakthroughs, to help them have spiritual breakthroughs in psychology.
Right.
To, like you're saying, to help heal them. There's a,
right.
And somewhere we lost our way.
Right. Well, I think what happened in the 60s when we had the counterculture or whatever you want to call it in the 60s, a lot of things just kind of flew under the blanket, if you will, and there was kind of a blanket ban on everything. You know, you had some illicit drugs, but then you also had some, you know, the psychedelia was involved in it.
Yeah.
So you had this blanket ban on all psychedelics, and that just kind of stopped everything right there for many years, 30, 40, 50 years now.
Yeah.
But now we're finally getting to the point where we're beginning to see, okay, we made a mistake. There were some things that were banned that shouldn't have been banned, because now we're seeing the scientific benefit, you know, the psychological benefit. People are using MDMA assisted therapy, and that's gone into clinical trials, and even the psilocybin has gone into clinical trials for depression. Well, microdosing that,
and what's funny,
so we're beginning
is
to come out of it. That's a good thing.
MDMA,
very good thing.
MDMA
and decriminalization has been a great thing to help that along, because it's just going to influence the way the legal system works further. You know, when you say decriminalization, say in Portugal, for instance, Portugal, all drugs are decriminalized.
Yep.
I have a very good friend that has an Ibogaine clinic in Portugal, and we speak frequently. And all the drugs are decriminalized there, to the point where, if you know, say you go up to somebody that's shooting heroin up in a park, you don't arrest them. You go up and you offer them help. You know, do you think you're being helped with your use of heroin or whatever? It's not a criminal matter anymore.
Yeah,
and that's what needs to happen in this country. You know, all the drugs need to be decriminalized. We have far too many people in penitentiaries serving way too much time for things that, you know, are just, frankly ridiculous. So we need to go to a model like Portugal. We need to decriminalize. And when we get into that mindset, we can then go forward and advance the science of this. The science of microdosing ayahuasca, ibogaine, psilocybin, all of these things.
Well, and
that's just my opinion, but I do believe, you know, that's the way a lot of the people that work with these substances are trying to get. And there's a lot of us that are proponents for decriminalization across the country.
Well, and where I think people get lost, Byron, and I've tried to explain to this to people whenever it comes to decriminalization of marijuana, even legalization of marijuana, is you can't just go to the park and open a six-pack.
Right.
But beer's legal. All right? Same thing. You're not supposed to go to the park and roll up a J. And light it up.
Right.
That's not how that's supposed to work. It's supposed to be in your home, folks.
Right.
Or in a properly designated location.
Right. And that's the whole thing. You know, when people can see these things can be used responsibly.
Man.
They can be used in a clinic, or they can be used in a home setting, or a place of healing. We have many churches now. They're called churches, but your church is for ayahuasca. They hold ayahuasca sacraments. There's even churches for Abu Ghain, more in South America, but they're coming into the North America. But mainly, you know, in North America right now, there's churches for ayahuasca sacrament. These things are used responsibly. They're used with a trained professional that's dealt with them for years. And they're going to help you, you know, when you ingest the substance, they're going to help you through your journey with it. And they're going to help you through to your healing. It's not about an illicit drug. It's not a drug. It's an entheogen. And that is the proper term, entheogen. That's what these substances are, because they're healing substances. And that's the way you use them. And that's what I think the big people that are pushing for decriminalization, they're very involved in the healing community, in the community that wants to promote these substances being used in psychological medicine, you know, healing and that sort of thing. You know, it's about nothing else, really. So I think it's a great thing, you know, and marijuana as well. Marijuana is a very, it's been vilified.
Oh, yeah. You
know, it's been vilified for 60, 70 years now, you know, and that was just propaganda.
Oh, and shown to be such.
Even
Dinesh D'Souza, or not Dinesh D'Souza, I'm sorry. I was reading an article by him earlier, but...
Oh, he's a great guy.
But I'm trying to remember who it was. He was the head of the World Health Organization a few years ago. Came out and said that I've been shown studies now that I've never had access to. Why has nobody shown me this? Marijuana absolutely has medical benefits.
Right. Why do people not understand there's a cannabinoid system in the human body?
Yeah, and it was the classification of marijuana and other psychoactive substances by the DEA whenever they were created as Schedule One, which meant that they had no therapeutic use. They had no medicinal use whatsoever. They weren't even good for research. And that's the thing, is that you can't even do research on these things. Like MDMA, was actively used originally by relationship therapists in guided session between husband and wife, where they would, because MDMA, folks, just so you know, street name ecstasy. And so it was originally used in therapy sessions to bring couples closer together, to drop the barriers of communication. And
it's very effective. Effective. And people now are, our people now are seeking, you know, underground ways to access these therapies.
That's just
it's
it.
Really.
It gets dangerous.
Right. And, you know, if we could make this safer. You know, it's about harm reduction. That's another thing. That's the term I love, is harm reduction. Mm. When you go into these things with a harm reduction mindset, you're going into these kinds of therapies saying that, okay, if we make these therapies available to trained people, trained psychologists, trained psychiatrists, can we make this available to them for them to use for therapy? They can do it safely. You know, and without decriminalization, we're not going to have that. That's the beginning. Decriminalization is the beginning of that argument and that discussion and that, you know, thing moving forward to bring these things into therapeutic settings. And frankly, that's where we need them. You know, they're beginning to do these studies on mushrooms, psilocybin, and depression. But, you know, we have a whole lot of other, you know, substances out there to work with.
And what would be interesting, Byron, would actively be a study with these indigens, with the indigenous cultures that use them.
Uh-huh.
Possibly even showing the difference in the rate of depression, rate of psychosis, things like that, that happen within these cultures, and whether or not these cultures have had ready access to society as well, being included in that. Because, you know, you don't, like, there's an average, folks, you know, there's like a number, like one out of every, like, 10 people is going to have some type of depression, you know, things like that. But is that the case in the Amazon with the people that have been using ayahuasca?
You know, it's interesting that you say that, Chris, because I don't know what the percentages are or the rates of, you know, illnesses are, but I would say that in the past, cultures that have used the ayahuasca, cultures that have used the ibogaine even, cultures that have used DMT, have far less likelihood of people, you know, with psychological, long-term psychological illnesses. They usually go for healing. The shamans work with the people. They work with the substances, and they somehow bring about a homeostasis, you know, in a person's mental health. And that's what's been thought for thousands of years. And that's what's been had for thousands of years in these cultures that have used these substances. And that's just, well, that's just scientific fact. You know, as far as what, you know, the percentages as contrasted to our state today, I don't know. But I would say we're far less healthier than we were in those times using those substances with those shamans.
Yeah, absolutely. And the key here, folks, is research. Right. That is the door that's opening with the decriminalization. We aren't talking about, like, just being able to stroll down the street with your eighth of mushrooms, you know? Right. Of course, that means that you won't go get a, just because you're trying to expand yourself a little or relax on a Saturday night, doesn't mean that you're going to end up with a prison record. You know,
right?
Or with a police record of some sort, or a felony charge, because you've got to eat the mushrooms. And that's nice too. We're also unburdening the legal system, which is fantastic in most major cities. The other big thing, though, is that this is opening the floodgates for research. It is allowing studies to be able to actively go on in these states while these things maintain a Schedule One status with the DEA, which hopefully these unabashed studies and things like that will help bring about a change in those. Because even most studies that were done properly with marijuana were poo-pooed long ago and will never be looked at, ever.
Right.
Because of that. It's tainted. It's fruit of a tainted tree right now, and you're not going to do it.
We're going to have to take these things out of the Schedule One, format, if you will. Schedule One meaning there's no medical use or, you know, known use for this substance, which is just not the case. That's just not true. That's a complete misnomer there. But once we take these things out of Schedule One and we make them available to scientists, people that want to do the studies, you know, like we're doing with psilocybin. I don't know exactly how that's working out as far as how they're descheduling or rescheduling. I'm not sure how that's working out as far as, you know, how they're making it available to people that are doing the research. And I really haven't seen any studies yet.
I'm pretty sure it's the fact that they can grow it.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, they can do this with the other substances. But once we decriminalize, that's the first step. That's it right there in a nutshell. Once it's decriminalized and we get this going across the land, you know, we've got it going on in Oakland. in Colorado, you know, but we need to make it wider. You know, it needs to be a wider thing. It needs to become federal, that it's decriminalized. And hopefully that will be the case in the next 5 years. I actually do see that coming in the next 5 years.
Well,
in the next 5 years, I do see it.
It's very interesting because our drug war, and we've talked about this with Raul Diego from Deep City Chronicles before. He's busy working on his documentary Ghost on the Water right now, but we had him on to talk about his miniseries documentary that he did, the Unhinged Truth of the Drug War. And
about the failure that the drug war is.
Oh, yeah, but not just that, about the fact that most countries where drugs are illegal and stuff like that, it's because they want to do business with us. It's because we you want to do business with us, you will enforce this law in your land.
Right.
And that's crazy sauce. That's crazy. It's true. And it's absolute truth.
We have a big deep state problem here. But that's a different subject.
Oh yeah, that's a conversation. I've got guests for that, buddy. Believe me.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do.
I'm not connected to QAnon, but there may be an on in there.
Well, there's a serious problem with the deep state, and drugs are a big problem.
Well, it's just the fact of
The CIA are the ones that brought cocaine and flooded college campuses with it.
Yep.
You know, and as a consequence from these things that they brought in to flood college campuses with, all these other wonderful substances fell under a blanket ban of criminalization. And that was wrong. And now we're beginning to see that wrong. Thank goodness.
Well, and let's not also forget the marriage of Big Pharma into that, enough, much like our guest last week where we were talking about the decorporatization of America and getting rid of all that. Yeah, you know, it's funny how, you know, you invite the drug companies in to help write the laws that regulate the drug companies. You bring in the healthcare system to help write the law that regulates the healthcare system. That's funky to me. I was never brought into HR to like, hey, let's write your rules real quick.
It's the fox guarding the hen house.
Oh yeah, most definitely. And it's the dirtiest money washes the most hands. That's all there is to it. And to see the fact that yes, there were active interests in people like DuPont, in major companies like Johnson and Johnson, big pharma companies, stuff like that.
It's better than heroin.
Oh, yeah.
It is better than heroin.
Yeah, exactly how it was advertised. This is better than morphine.
Right.
So exactly. So I'm going to give it to someone for a daily maintenance then, because it's better than morphine, you know, because that's what any doctor in his sane mind is going to give somebody for a daily maintenance is some morphine.
But that's exactly what happened. And you know, the thing is if we'd had these other things come into play, these other substances like psilocybin, ayahuasca, ibogaine, we might have had, well, ibogaine can correct an opioid dependency in as little as 8 hours. That's how incredible this medicine is. Nothing else on earth can do that. Well, nothing on earth can do that.
And, you know, Byron, real quick, because we do have 1 hour with our audience in the Hudson Valley on WMLD. I don't want them to not hear about what y'all do at Beginnings Ibogaine. So let's go ahead and get into just a minute for about the next 15 minutes or so before we roll on a little bit deeper into this. What is Ibogaine? And what do you guys do at Beginnings Ibogaine Clinic?
Sure. What we do is we take a person that is opioid tolerant, and that is a person that is addicted to heroin, OxyContin, fentanyl, which is being cut into the heroin now. You can very rarely get pure heroin now anymore. It's usually cut with fentanyl coming from Chinese laboratories. So that's the real opiate crisis in this country, is fentanyl.
Absolutely.
From Chinese labs.
That's what and cost so, us all our stars.
Right, right. And people are just dying right and left. They can't even get the needle out of their arm before they're dead. But what we do is we take a person that's very opioid dependent, and we treat them with a substance called Ibogaine. And the way that works is we bring them into a clinic. We do some testing. We do testing on the heart to see if the heart is sufficient to be a candidate for treatment. We also do treatment or testing on the liver to see if the liver enzymes are, you know, if your liver is able to metabolize the Ibogaine and the other substances we're going to throw at you. And we basically do a treatment where we hook you up to a heart monitor. You're on the heart monitor. You're just kind of laying there in bed for about 8 hours. And we give you doses of Ibogaine. And we give that incrementally. So we kind of ease you into the trip because it is a psychedelic. It does cause a psychedelic trip. But at the end of that 8-hour trip, which is about 8 to 10 hours, you are going to have your brain chemistry reset. The receptors in your brain will be healed. Receptors that, you know, you've exposed to narcotics for, you know, years are going to be suddenly healed because Iboga expresses a nerve growth factor in the actual plant, in the medicine itself, that heals these receptors. And so you come out of this, and most people go through a withdrawal process, you know, when they quit using opiates. If you suddenly stop using opiates, you're going to go into a withdrawal process.
Oh, yeah.
That can last for, you know, a couple of weeks, up to a couple of years.
And can be physically taxing as well.
Physically sick. You're going to be physically sick. You're going to be physically sick. And I mean, it's like people that have gone through this would never want to go through this if they didn't have to. But with Ibogaine, we can shut all of this off. We can turn all of the withdrawal symptoms off in about 8 hours. So when the person comes out of the trip, they're pretty much done with the opiate. There's no cravings for them. The withdrawal symptoms are gone. You know, everything's just back to the way it was before you started using the medication or before you started using the heroin or fentanyl or whatever it is that you were using. And that's how Ibogaine works. And there's no other substance on earth like it. There's nothing else that can do this. So it's kind of a wonder medicine, but it's a medicine that's been used by the Bahwini tribe in Africa for thousands of years. They've used it as a rite of passage. But, you know, we just kind of found out by accident that it works with opioid withdrawal. So that was kind of found out by accident by a guy that was a heroin addict himself. And he used it, you know, a friend suggested he used it when he ran out of his heroin. When he used it that time, he used it and had a psychedelic trip. At the end of the trip, he realized he didn't need the heroin anymore. So that's how we got it. But it's a great medicine, and we're using it to this day out of the country in Mexico. Baja, Mexico is where we're using our, that's where we have our clinic, beginning to begin.
And just since having you on, I've told you before, I would myself still love to come down and go through a treatment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just to be able to better explain it to my audience. Cause I can talk about my psychedelia experiences, my experiences on LSD,
sure.
Mushrooms, things like that. I have yet to, try ayahuasca, and I've been trying to find you. And that's actually how we met, was in an ayahuasca chat group.
Yeah, it sure was.
But with me looking for an ayahuascara to come on the show, and you were like, well, this is what I do. And then I started doing some research, not just into you guys, but into the topic of Ibogaine. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. This is great. And to know that compounds like Ibogaine and Iboga are on the list of things, like they haven't fully hit yet. I don't think Ibogaine hit the list in Oakland. I think was by far, as of right now, the most comprehensive decriminalization out of everybody.
And it was almost included, but not quite yet.
And I mean, they hit just about every other indigen, though, where it was like, okay, we're gonna go with ayahuasca. We're gonna go. I can't remember. Did they decriminalize cane toad?
I'm not sure about that.
I'd have to look that one up. I don't like doing a lot of Googling anymore while I talk to my guests, but I'll have to Google stalk that. If somebody wants to Google it and let us know here on the Facebook group, we have quite a few people joined up on the show right now. But yeah, I mean, they went ayahuasca, they went mushrooms, they went and numerous species of mushrooms at that. They went with San Pedro cactus. They went with, excuse me, mescaline and peyote.
Right.
Like, a few forms of DMT. And yeah, it was incredible to see this enlightening moment.
I know that they had both the 5-MeO and the NN-DMT listed separately, which, you know, a lot of people get those two confused.
Well, and explain that. Yeah, please.
Okay. Well, what happens? You have two forms of the DMT. Now, you have the DMT that's in ayahuasca. That's a very long-acting form of DMT. And it's a couple of plants that are combined in a brew. One is considered a monoamine oxidase inhibitor, and the other is the actual DMT. And the monoamine oxidase inhibitor just makes it bioavailable. So you have to brew these two things together. But you have these two forms of short-acting DMT, which are NN-DMT, nitrogen-nitrogen DMT, or 5-MeO, which is 5-methyloxyl-dimethyltryptamine. And the difference between those two is that NN-DMT is very visual in its effects. It's going to be more like an LSD trip. You're going to have more of a... Yeah, it's very visual in its characteristic. And then when you use the 5-MeO-DMT, it's more like just bright white light. And that's the way people describe it. It's an immediate out-of-body experience. And just bright white light. And that's pretty much all they can comprehend. And those are the differences between those two forms of DMT. And you have a lot of people that really don't know that, but being a person that sees both of them, I do know that.
And it's very interesting, though, because there are, like you said, two different forms and produced by different things in nature.
Right. And you know, they do have different, the way the shamans use them, Chris, is very differently too. The shamans
Absolutely.
Use the bright white light form of the 5-MeO, they use it in a different way than they do the very visual NN-DMT. They guide people in different ways, but they find healing in both of these things. People are finding healing in using the 5-MeO and the NN-DMT. So, you know, it's quite fascinating to me.
I've yet to meet anybody that has tried either form that has not been utterly changed by it. And I know quite a few people that did mushrooms back in their day, and you know, it wasn't like a life-changing experience for them.
Well, And it is. It is a very it's a very profound experience. That was the only word I had when I first used 5-MeO. That was the first one I used. I've used 10N since then, but I used 5-MeO first.
Yeah.
And I was trying to text back to the United States, you know, what the experience was like. And the only word I could think of was, this is so profound.
Yeah.
And I capitalized it.
Yeah.
And, and that was in Mexico in about maybe 2013. That I first used, but it was profound. And all of the experiences I've had with any of the psychedelics have been profound. I've used them all, the major ones anyway, the ayahuasca, the ibogaine, the DMT. But they're all profound and they're all very healing, and they've all brought me nothing but benefit. You know, psychologically, I was depressed for years. I didn't know how I was going to get out of it. I took an antidepressant, you know, that wasn't doing me any good at all. But when I went down and used the ibogaine, I was freed. You know, it just took one session, and the depression was over. And I haven't been depressed again since then.
Wow.
You know, not like I was. You know, sure, I have the blues once in a while, like everybody does. But this was, you know, deep, deep depression. This was PTSD. And I found relief with ibogaine.
Well, and one of the last topics we actually had you on about was the nasal ketamine spray that was approved by the FDA for people who had gone into such a state of debilitating depression that all other methods had failed. And this is yet another instance where, once again, you hear ketamine, you think Special K, you know, just like you hear ecstasy or you hear MDMA, you think ecstasy. You start thinking about pills with brown spots and bad things happening at clubs and raves. The stories start taking over instead of the scientific fact. And yes, ketamine is a strong dissociative, which means it dulls everything, but you're still kind of there.
And we spoke of in the last show that we did about the ketamine that, you know, this is one of the biggest advances.
Yeah.
In
depression
in psychological
therapy.
Psychological medicine.
Absolutely. Years. Absolutely.
And that still holds to be true, and it will be true for years.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that they came up with something that once again was a substance that, because of things happening, because of Special K, people going out and getting that and mixing it with other stuff back in the 90s, it got a horrible name. I mean, people would go out and, if you remember, folks, people were going out and robbing veterinary clinics around the country. It was like back in the meth cooking days, you know, where people were just going out and buying trucker pills by the case.
Crazy times. Mm-hmm.
It was the Wild West, and it was before ketamine got wrapped up with hydrocodone. It got wrapped up with ephedrine and pseudoephedra, where it got classified up there with everything else. And became locked down by the DEA and FDA and verboten. So thus, once again, and there was some great stuff going on with ketamine before that happened, which is where this study kind of first started.
And it's taken this long to kind of break it out of
20 years. 20 years.
If you will. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. But we are breaking it out. The decriminalization of all these things.
Yeah.
One's going to overlap into the other. And I would say in the next 5 years, we're going to see decriminalization go across the country. And when I see it go federal, which is what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Then we're really going to have, you know, our foot in the door.
Well,
and that's what we need.
Exactly. One last time, real quick. We'll continue the conversation, everybody, in the Hudson Valley area listening on WMLD. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to check out dudesandbeer.com. This episode is going out live there. right now, but you are, of course, in simulcast replay, so feel free to stop on by the website, and you can check out the full episode. Before we let them go, Byron, let them know where they can go to find out more about you and the services of Beginnings Ibogaine Clinic.
Sure. Well, it's Beginnings Ibogaine, and the website is beginningsibogaine.com. We have a clinic in Rosarito, Mexico. You're welcome to call my personal cell number at 903-707-0258. We also have a 1-800 number on the website. Can't think it offhand exactly what number that is, but it's on the website, beginningsibogaine.com. But that's where we'll treat you with Ibogaine if you're opiate or opioid dependent, or even dependent on something like methamphetamine or even alcohol. We're using it for all types of substance abuse. But that's pretty much it.
Fantastic. And if you do want to get a hold of Beginnings Ibogaine, folks, that number is 1-800-649-2399. Once again, 1-800-649-2399. BeginningsIbogaine.com is where you can go to get your online application for treatment and begin the conversation with your consultant today, and even talk to Byron, as he said, with his phone number while you are online checking out BeginningsIbogaine.com. Make sure to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast. Dudesandbeer.com is the website. HCUniversalNetwork.com is the motherland website of our parent network, HC Universal. All kinds of great shows. Make sure and stop on by there. Keep on tuning in to WMLD, the voice of the Hudson Valley. Thank you so much, everybody. Make sure to check out audibletrial.com/dudesandbeer to get your 30 free days today for the holidays. Make sure to tell your friends and family, 30 free days of Audible at audibletrial.com/dudesandbeer. And now that shameless part is over, let's continue the conversation, because here recently was a landmark moment in legislation in the United States regarding things like this. The Marijuana Funding Act finally went through. And this was not on a lot of people's radar. It wasn't really something that a lot of people were like nail biting around the country, but there were a lot of people that were. And the reason why this weighs in, folks, is because a lot of states, you see, have legalized full on recreational and everything. But the issue is, once again, federally illegal. So they cannot purchase any product from another state. They have to provide all of it in-house and in-state. And that's for medical and recreational use. They can't even have it shipped from another state where it is legal. So, enter the Marijuana Funding Act. What this does, and that also makes it to where if you wanted to start up a business, like, I want to start up a medical grow factory to be able to help out people and to be able to provide affordable medical marijuana to people going through chemo. Well, you couldn't even get a grant for that federally to begin with. And you definitely couldn't go get a FICA loan because the product that you're in trying to sell is federally illegal. So the legalization of hemp that just went through nationally played a big part in that, because of course you can't legally trade hemp over state lines when it's still a regulated thing. So the Marijuana Funding Act really is going to lay a lot of groundwork for the decriminalization of a lot of these things that we are starting to see on the news, everything else, and in this whole realm of everything. Because at this point, like I said, once it's decriminalized, the learning institution can grow it. They can research it. They can start grants on researching it. And you couldn't do that before. You couldn't have a grant for somebody to study the effects of psilocybin on depression, but now you can. And that changes the face of all of it. That changes the face of medical research involved with these substances and compounds. It changes the public face of how these compounds are viewed by people. And yes, there will always be abusers, Byron. That's always the first thing I hear from people is, next thing you know, everybody's smoking reefer while they're driving.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, you know, cause back in the day, everybody just drove around with a tall boy, you know?
Oh yeah.
No, some people drove around with a tall boy. Yeah. Guess what? Those people probably are still driving around with a tall boy. You passing the law, it didn't stop them from driving around with the tall boy. Right. They just poured it into a 7-Eleven cup.
It's just silly. It's silly. The propaganda that came out years ago, and it's still around, and it's vilified everything. But that's not the truth. The truth is the truth. And the truth is that these people that are seeking these medicines now, including marijuana, are mainly seeking them for relief of, some type of a mental health problem going on or some type of healing. That's what people are seeking these medicines for. Nobody goes out and does ayahuasca for fun.
Yeah.
It's not enough.
Yeah.
It's just not that kind of a substance. You know, it's frankly like going into hell for some people. You know, they're going to encounter their own personal demons. People don't do that for fun. You know, so it's ludicrous. Some of it is just ludicrous to me. And the people that are using marijuana, well, you and I both know that marijuana is pretty inane. It's not nearly as problematic as alcohol is.
No.
You know, when you're out and about, you know, alcohol is a much more damaging drug, if you will. And it is a drug.
Oh,
but
sure.
It's much more of a problem than marijuana will ever be. So I don't know. It's just frankly ridiculous, some of this.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's good that there's awareness coming into it now.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm always very, very specific whenever I use that four-letter word, drug.
Right.
Very specific whenever I talk to people about that word, because entheogens are not a drug, folks.
No, they're not. Not at all. Even
ayahuasca, not a drug.
No.
Because it has not gone through a chemical process. All you're doing is boiling something. That's it.
It's an entheogen. It comes from the earth.
Yeah.
It's a natural substance,
and
you know, it's only typically ever been used in the past for healing.
Yeah,
that's all anyone has ever used it for.
Yeah, drugs go through specifically a chemical process to be made.
They do.
You're taking a biological substance. A perfect example: cocaine, a drug.
Oh yeah,
coca, medicinal plant. Used by indigenous people without addiction for years and years and years. Hey, chewed by our vice president on his trip to Peru into the Himalayas. Because you know what?
That's the only way
you're going to breathe in the Andes, folks. Above a certain height to go to places like Machu Picchu and stuff like that. So,
and many people find the tea very therapeutic.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and it was, of course, a base of Coca-Cola. That's where the coca came from. And no, they didn't put cocaine in it. What it was an extract of coca. They basically boiled the coca, made a tea, and put it in there. It was a tonic.
Right.
It was a totally different effect than cocaine. You weren't getting strung out. You weren't like cooking down your soda pop and then shooting it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right.
So, totally different things. But the prime example is, once again, somebody has to take that natural plant, put it through a chemical process in order to get an end result that is cocaine.
Sure.
Which, was originally made for medicinal purposes. I mean, you want an actual interesting read, folks. It's very Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, but in real life, go read the Cocaine Diaries.
By
Sigmund Freud.
Oh, no.
He was actively a regular, everyday user of cocaine, used it as a little pick-me-up, but diaried himself like as a psychiatrist would. Much like I've told you, Byron, that whenever I come do my flood dose at Beginnings Ibogaine, I want to record it. I want to listen to myself on my clear day, like when I'm clearing everything and I'm done. It's like, okay, let's hear what my body and my mind actively released in those moments.
Given, Chris, we will do that for you.
It would,
we will absolutely do that for you.
You know, and to use substances in that way are the proper, respectful, the reverent way to do it. To go out. And I'm not going to say that I didn't do it, folks. I did it. I also don't advocate anybody younger than 21 smoking marijuana. I just don't.
Yeah.
There are judgment centers in your brain that are not developed yet, and that's just psychologically known. And when you're going to do something that could inhibit that to begin with, you can lead to more impulsive behavior. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's going to damage your brain.
No.
I'm just going to say it will inhibit your already inhibited decision making.
And I'll throw in there that males are the last to develop that.
We're the most impulsive ones of the bunch, man.
Yeah,
we're the ones looking for the bridge to go jump off of. All right.
Right. Exactly. We know who we are, don't we?
I see at least one guy in the comment section over here who joined up that he knows who he is. I know he's jumped off a bridge or two.
That's too bad.
And that's just it, though. That's what we have to be careful of whenever we are going psychonaut, whenever we're going into these realms, whenever we are properly exploring this stuff. You need to have somebody there with you. You've got to. Yeah, I mean, to go into things unprepared, psychologically unprepared, emotionally, spiritually unprepared.
Right.
There's a reason why an ayahuasca will have you do like a good 3-day, sometimes week-long detoxification cleanse and fasting.
Not uncommon.
You know,
not uncommon at all. Not uncommon at all. A good ayahuasca will absolutely do that.
Yeah,
he'll pay attention to your body and how your body's flowing with the medicine, and of course he never uses the term drug. He's using the term medicine.
Yeah,
that's all they ever refer to it as is medicine, and they will absolutely work with you on that. But you know, so with the Ibogaine too. You know, we look at that as medicine. It is medicine.
Well,
it's nothing else.
And even when you ask them where this knowledge came from, they say the plants told them.
The plants told them, yes. It comes from the plants. The plants are, and that's why we call them master plants, because they have a knowledge that goes back for thousands of years. And each time, you know, we use these medicines, we gain the insight that the plants give us. So we call them master plants, you know, and they're just like, they're a tool. And I think that now that hopefully society is going to be looking at these plants as more of a tool than a drug, and that's going to be a good thing. And that's what I hope for.
Well, and just a little while ago, we were when we started talking about ayahuasca, DMT, things like that, we were talking about how there's actively a cannabinoid system in our body, and it's not necessarily this way for a lot of things like psilocybin. I want to say mescaline is in the DMT family, though, correct?
Well, it's loosely.
It's like a derivative compound.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
DMT specifically is one of those compounds that, much like cannabinoids, THC, our bodies have receptors for. Our body secretes DMT. Yeah.
The monks that used to meditate for hours produced small amounts of DMT. That's what we have, a pineal gland. If it's not calcified in most people. But we have a pineal gland, and that pineal gland supposedly operates in a system of DMT. So our body does produce small amounts of DMT, just like many plants and animals do.
Now you just brought up something that I've heard numerous times. I am aware of. Our audience may not be aware of, Byron. Explain the calcification of a pineal gland. Number one, let's delve just a little bit, because in order to understand psychoactive substances and what it is that Byron Birkhammer does, folks, you got to kind of understand the psycho in there, the brain, mind, the understanding, and to understand what the pineal gland does to begin with. And then what the difference is between a healthy and a calcified pineal gland.
Well, let me explain what a pineal gland is. The pineal gland is basically, it's been referred to over time as the third eye. And what it really is, it is an organ in the brain. It's an organ that's almost exactly like an eye. It has rods and cones in it, just like an eyeball does.
Really?
Yes, it does. It does. But it can only see in the dark because it's enclosed in the brain. But it is an organ that's just pretty much almost like the human eye. Got rods and cones in it. And what happens is, back in, say, World War II, the Nazis actually started using fluoride to basically keep prisoners calm. They thought that when they added fluoride to water, that it would keep the prisoners calm and that their concentration camps wouldn't get out of control and that sort of thing. And somehow that's just kind of systematically spilled over into the United States, because we have that's a different story, but we have a fourth Reich going on here. But somehow we have started adding fluoride to our water with a misconception that it would heal our teeth, cavities, things like that, which is just totally untrue.
Yeah.
Fluoride does not need to be added to water. In fact, when it's added to water, they have to use chemically protective gear.
Yep.
Like a hazmat suit, add it to the water because it's considered a poison.
Yeah.
So they're adding this poisonous fluoride to water. And what this does is it basically calcifies the pineal gland. Now, what mystics have believed for thousands of years is that the pineal gland is basically our gateway to a multidimensional reality, if you will. And it's our gateway to access spiritual state. It's our access to gain these states that these potent psychedelic medicines can get. So when the psychedelic medicines are given to us, essentially they're operating within the field of the pineal gland, and they're accessing the pineal gland and causing the experience. That's the beauty of decalcified pineal gland. There's ways to do it. If you've, drunk fluoridated water for years, there are ways to defluoridate and decalcify the pineal gland. There's different techniques on YouTube, that sort of thing. You can Google it and find out. But that's basically what it is, Chris. It's the third eye. It's our spiritual gateway, if you want to call it.
Well, and it's interesting because the pineal gland lies for most folks right underneath where your soft spot is as a kid. Your pineal gland is the lack of light to your pineal gland is what causes a SAD, seasonal affective disorder, which I actively suffered from whenever I was in Maine. Where you just get really down. Well, I mean, come this time of year in Maine, it's pretty much gray 3/4 of the time until springtime. So you don't get a whole lot of sunlight, cause there's cloud cover all the time. You see it a lot in people up near Alaska, things like that, and far polar regions, that kind of stuff where you're just deprived of daylight. Your brain does not get the vitamin D that it's supposed to get. Right. And it's a regular occurrence for all of us because we live such a sedentary lifestyle now. We aren't out fishing. We aren't out gardening. We aren't out farming, doing those kind of things. We're locked inside podcasting, man.
Right.
You know, like, that's the world that we live in, and we wonder why the mania that we live under exists. You know, it's because, yeah, we aren't getting that exercise. We aren't getting that daylight into our brain that we're supposed to be getting, that we're naturally supposed to have and crave. It's interesting, just to even rabbit hole on the topic of the pineal gland right there, because it's really something that people do not realize a lot about. They do not understand what that gland does in their body and what they can do to exercise it. Literally, I just told you folks, the best thing you can do is remove your hat and go outside and get an hour of sunlight a day. You know, try to get at least 30 minutes of sunlight on the top of your head a day if you can. You'll notice rapidly that you start feeling a little bit happier after a week or so of doing it. It's great. A lot of people use daylight bulbs just to kind of simulate that action inside. There are companies that have completely switched to daylight bulbs because of this research and understanding of how light affects the pineal gland. And it's amazing the things that our brains do and what these chemicals and compounds found in nature can help us discover about them. Byron, thank you so much for taking the time once again to come on the show, as you always do, to share this vast realm of knowledge about hallucinogens, hallucinogenic research, the world of Ibogaine and the wonderful healing manifestations that it has, CBD, everything. We're soon hopefully going to be getting a CBD manufacturer, who is coming on to talk the science of manufacturing and what you need to look for whenever you're getting CBD oils. Cause it's the new snake oil, folks. It's come out here recently that, vitamin E is apparently what has been causing the popcorn lung in people.
Yeah.
And once again, like I said on the Dudes and Beer group, commenting to our good friend and former guest Andy McDearman, he posted an article talking about that, and I was like, yes, and most of those were coming from non-label brands. So make sure to buy something that's barcoded. Make sure to buy something that has a state-approved stamp on it.
Don't buy
from people off the street. Don't buy from your friends. Buy directly from a distributor. Buy directly from, you know, go to a state, get one. What have you. It's too dangerous to not do it. There are too many knockoffs. Years ago, people started with the Kush and stuff like that, using different chemicals, and that's basically the same thing. They're using the same chemicals along with vitamin E, which simulates the thickness of the CO2 extracted CBD oil. So they're using these research chemicals and stuff like that in conjunction with that to make a synthesized marijuana product. And it's horrifying. Wow. It's horrifying. And there will always be people doing that. There will always be people like the toad shamans that we talked about in our last visit, Byron, where they're just somebody that went out and bought a toad, man, and they learned how to dry the poison. You know, they don't know the dosage. They don't, like, good Lord, I can't think of a shaman in his right mind that would probably give you standard ayahuasca and toad poison at the same dosage, at the same time.
They pride themselves in knowing, you know, a proper dose.
Well, I hear about it all the time, though, where people are like, yeah, you know, we did both of them at the same time. And I'm like, no. I don't know of an ayahuasca shaman that would do that.
And that's the same way with ibogaine. Ibogaine is so inherently dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, if it's used in the hands of the inexperienced, that, you know, I'm going to have a physician administering the, you know, ibogaine in the clinic.
Yeah, exactly. It's under a controlled circumstance. It's under observation. Right. You're observed the whole time.
You're on a heart monitor.
Yeah. Precisely. So there's a difference when you're going to somewhere like Beginnings Ibogaine and when you've joined like an Ibogaine group on Reddit and go into somebody's backyard in Wisconsin for a weekend, you know?
But it is out there, and it's good to know that it is out there, and that, you know, you need to be properly trained. You need to have proper supervision. You should never do this alone.
Exactly. I am all about awareness of these entheogens, these fantastic substances provided by the earth.
Right.
But you've got to be respectful of them. Just like the earth, just like the critters walking around the earth. They're beautiful, but pick up the wrong one and it'll kill you.
Exactly.
Same rule applies to the plants standing still, folks.
Right.
Pick up the wrong one or use the wrong amount of the wrong one, and it will kill you.
Exactly.
So,
well, Chris, I've enjoyed having this discussion with you tonight. And,
always.
You know, you lend a lot to, you know, a good discussion, interview.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you always coming on, sharing your vast realm of knowledge in this area, and helping educate our audience on the difference between entheogens and drugs and why these things are being decriminalized. It's not just because of a party culture, folks. It's because real research can be done. If we decriminalize real people can get help.
This is the real work, Chris. What you and I are doing tonight, this is the real work.
Thank you.
This is real work to advance this science, to advance this medicine.
It starts with conversation.
It does. Absolutely.
It starts with two scientists sitting around a tuna sandwich going, why can't we do this?
Right. Exactly.
You know?
And I sure have enjoyed it.
And it's same sure here. I love having you on every time. We need to make it more regular. It's been way too long.
Anytime. So you just let me know.
You bet. Anytime you got a topic you want to talk about, you feel free to give a shout. Before we let you go, one last time, let everybody know where they can go to get a hold of you and Beginnings Ibogaine to get their Ibogaine treatment, to start their path to healing and well-being today.
Sure. Okay. It's the link to the website is beginningsibogaine.com. And my personal cell number is 903-707-0258. And the 1-800 number is 1-800-639-7.
Hold on. Give me one second. It's coming up right now. That number, folks, for Beginnings Ibogaine is 1-800-649-2399.
649-2399.
That is beginningsibogaine.com to go and apply for your treatment today. Byron, please do hold the line while we close things out. Once again, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your passion for this topic and your passion for healing and understanding about these compounds and substances. While you are online checking out all the great work of Byron Birkhammer and the folks at Beginning Ibogaine, please do stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast. That's where you can find all the episodes in their entirety. Everything, people. We haven't locked anything down yet. So, yet is the prime word. Anyway, stop on by. That's where you can get all the episodes. That's where you can find the Knowledge Vault if you want to find out more about declassified programs that the government does while you sleep, laws that are passed, what your rights are, all kinds of things. You want a copy of the Constitution? It's in there. Stop on by dudesandbeer.com/knowledge to check that out. Stop on by hcuniversalnetwork.com to check out us, all the other great shows. Until next time, everybody, check out audibletrial.com/dudesandbeer. Get your 30 free days. Till next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.